window and the other window. It isn't a separate wind that blows through each window. So in the same way, we are all something, we are all wavings of the universe, only we've forgotten it. That knowledge was never verbalized. We had it in a non-verbal form in infancy. But as soon as we were taught words, the words hypnotized us. One always hypnotizes with words. They hypnotized us out of that realization. Now, that doesn't mean to say that individuals just aren't there. That if you were awakened and free from illusion, this room would suddenly turn into a formless void. The void doesn't mean that in Buddhist philosophy. What it does mean is something like this, that we are individual in the sense that you can see separate and clearly formed waves or whirlpools in water. Now here is a whirlpool swinging around. The actual water is constantly flowing through the whirlpool. And there is no stuff permanently in the whirlpool. All that the whirlpool is a pattern. It's something the water is doing. And so in exactly the same way, we are a constant current of electronical phenomena. At a more obvious level, we are a current of beefsteak and potatoes and eggs and milk and water, all flowing through us. And we know that the cells in the human body are completely changed within at least 7-year periods. So who are you? In the same way as a university may change not only its student body every 4 years, but its faculty every 10 years, and its buildings every 100 years, and it's still known by the same name, the university. Well, what is the university? The university is a particular kind of behavior. You see, it's a particular kind of doings. And there we are. But you see, when you don't notice that, and the behavior changes slowly enough, like the behavior of this building, so as one thinks of it as a thing rather than a process, then we get into our heads that the world is full of things. But it ain't. So now let's just retrace our steps a moment to clarify some of the ideas about Maya. The first was measurement. Making sense out of the apparent formlessness of the world, the wiggliness of it, it's a better word than formlessness. Making sense out of the wiggliness of the world by cutting, as the grid cuts, or as the consciousness cuts out certain things that it deems as significant. That's measurement. The second is related to it, playing the game that things so cut are really separate. Now further than that, Maya means also magic. Magical power, the power to evoke, the power to create dramas. Now, all magic is related to drama, because the art of the dramatist is to convince the audience who've come to see a play that what is happening on the stage is real. The audience hopes to be convinced of that almost, but not quite. Now the conventions of drama provide a certain setup that we are all familiar with, in our culture at any rate, that there has to be a certain arrangement. There's an auditorium for the audience. There is a stage for the play. There is a proscenium arch that divides the stage from the auditorium, and behind the stage there is a green room for the actors to change their clothes. And there it all is. There's the whole box of tricks. Because what the proscenium arch says is to the audience, what goes on behind this arch on the other side of the footlights is not real. It is a play. And the actors have a place to go off and hide in the green room so that we won't see them changing their costumes or their masks or their personalities from plain Mr. Smith on the one hand to the role of Hamlet on the other. He will walk into our view as Hamlet. And although we know in the back of our minds that this is only in play, the skillful actor will put everybody on the edge of their seats in suspense because he half convinces them that it's real. And so he makes magic. Now, the Hindu doctrine of the creation of the universe is, if I may put it in extremely naive terms, that the Lord God, who in Hinduism doesn't have a beard and things like that as he does in the West, but is something unimaginable, however, he is represented often in the human form with many arms and so on, but the Lord God is playing that he's not himself. And in the Western version, the first thing that the Lord God said in creating the universe was, "Let there be light." But the Hindus would have said, the first thing he said was, "You must draw the line somewhere." That is this action of cutting, of maya, you see? And that's the whole of life. You must draw the line somewhere, you see? If we're going to draw a line at all, you see, there's going to be a difference between this and that, between good and evil, between the pleasant and the painful, between the modest and the immodest, whatever you will, you see, you've got to draw the line somewhere. So the whole of life is the game of where are we going to draw the line, see? And how far can you go? And then you'll be way in or you'll be way out, but still you've got to draw the line somewhere. And then that was maya, and then he decided, you see, the second thing he said to himself was, get lost. Because he was bored with being God. And he thought, you know, everything is possible, there is no obstacle in any direction, nothing is happening, so let's get lost. Let's pretend we are not God. And so he's pretended that he's all of us. And every one of us is the Lord in disguise, making a big scene that you're just little me. And it's very embarrassing when a good, skillful guru calls your bluff on this and says, "Listen, Shiva, stop kidding me. You know, I know who you are perfectly well, and all this come on that you're just you and that you have these problems and so on and so on. That's a lot of bullshit. Come off it." So, the person's very embarrassed by this. And makes out that they really don't know what the teacher's talking about. But just like the audience in the skillfully acted play knows in the back of its mind that it is a play, so every individual in the back of his mind, hardly and barely conscious, knows who he is. And he may insist on little me, just like, you know, when have you ever enjoyed being in a state of grief? Or hating someone? No, there's a fundamental zest in really hating someone. And you even though you don't really hate them somehow, you wouldn't want to give it up. Even though it's an unpleasant feeling to hate someone, you see? And so the sort of attitude of, "Oh, come off it," can sometimes penetrate through these negative emotional states. So, then you see, in the green room behind the stage, this corresponds to the back of the actor's mind. Because it's in the green room that he doffs his mask and changes his costume and drops his role, see? So it's interesting, isn't it, that the word person is a dramatic word, because the persona was the mask worn in classical drama. It is shaped with a mouthpiece like a megaphone, so that in the open-air stage the sound will travel. So that through which the sound comes, persona, the mask. So the dramatis personae in the beginning of a play is a list of the masks going to be worn by the actors. And by a very, very curious and significant subversion of the meaning of this word, how to be a real person. Think of that. How to be a genuine mask. A really successful fraud. That's Maya. Magic. The next meaning of Maya is art. Art, or indeed skill. I wonder, there's an old Greek tale that there was a competition in painting. And two very great painters were the final runners-up in the competition. And they had to do paintings that were going to be judged at a great affair. And the first one painted a vine with grapes on it. And it was so convincing that birds kept banging into it, trying to pick at the grapes. And the bees were coming around, you know, and wasps and so on. And everybody thought, my, isn't that fantastic? How clever this man is. Well, they said, we better have a look at the other painting. And they said to the artist, unveil it, draw the curtain, and let's see it. He said, what curtain? His painting was the curtain. Well, he was awarded the prize because it was considered more remarkable to deceive human beings than to deceive the birds. So, that story lies at the beginning of a world of art, a philosophy of art, which has prevailed, certainly in the West, for many thousands of years, really. The sense that the skill of an artist is to make art look like nature. And so the highest reach of Western technique comes with people like the great Flemish masters, Peter de Hoogh and Van Dyck and Van Eyck, and so on, who represent what you might call the peak of photographic realism, which eventually deteriorated into the sentimental painting of the 19th century with all its luscious nudes and historical, mythological scenes done like colored photographs. And for most people living today, the vast majority of Westerners, that is art. And anything else doesn't look like a picture. But, however, what is not appreciated about this, except by painters and people who understand the techniques involved, is that the camera has a prejudiced point of view. The camera does not see things as they are. It sees things as it is constructed to see them. The camera has been bewitched, and the lens is made the way it is made in order to conform with a certain philosophy of how things are supposed to look. For example, if you show a so-called primitive person a photograph of himself or of a friend, he will not recognize it. he will turn the picture over and look at the back and wonder what happened to the back of the person's head. He will not understand why it's flat. He will not understand perspective. Why are the things, the trees in the distance, smaller? They're all the same size. When an American GI in Paris during the war, or just after the war, met Picasso, they got into a discussion about modern painting, Picasso's painting, and this GI said he simply couldn't make head or tail of it. He said, the world doesn't look like that. Women don't look like that. Picasso said, do you have a girlfriend? And he said, yes. Well, he said, let me see her picture. And he pulled out his wallet, and he had a little photograph in the things and showed the picture. And Picasso stared at it and said, is she so small as that? So you see, it's a very instructive exercise to look really carefully at the surrounding world and not jump to conclusions about the colors of things. You see, a person might walk into this room and be asked, what color is it? And he would jump to the conclusion, oh, it's a sort of off-white. Now, it's nothing of the kind. Watch this wall carefully, and you will see that it's myriads of colors. Pearly grays, golds, blues, purples, all kinds of shadows play along it. But these shadows are not gray things, they're all colored. And luminous. So just to say it's off-white color is to have an idea in one's head and not to be using one's eyes at all. And to have an idea in one's head and not to be using your eyes is in a way to be a victim of Maya. But then you see art and Maya have a kind of a curious relationship. Because one is not merely a victim of Maya. There's good Maya and bad Maya, as it were. There's a way of creating a world. And in this sense, an artist or a poet is a great creator. The word poet, from the Greek poiesis, means to make or to do. The poets, then, are those who give us an imagination, that is, the power of building images, and so also painters teach us to see things that we never saw before. They evoke them. They see creatively, because we can see this Rorschach blot of the universe in many different ways, just as the ordinary Rorschach blot is seen in different ways by different people. And if I can convince you to see this Rorschach blot my way, I've not necessarily pulled the wool over your eyes, but I have given you a new possibility of imagination. So when there's a place in a national park called Inspiration Point, and everybody goes there and they say, well, I want it just like a picture. That is because they have seen the kind of landscapes that are reproduced on the tops of candy boxes and so on, and they know that this is supposed to be beautiful. Now, ask the question, of what is a landscape itself a picture? Are the clouds like anything? You know, do they reproduce something? Do the trees mean something? Are they symbols? Are they figures? Are they about something? No. So when an artist paints the landscape in a kind of chocolate box style, he's actually painting a painting of an abstraction, of a non-objective dance, which is the tree or the cloud, see, or the foam on the waves. It's just become a little corny, that's all. It's been done so often. So instead, painters thought, let's not do that. Let's, instead of copying the dances that nature is doing. Let's just make dances directly on the canvas. And so Jackson Pollock, you know, and everybody starts sort of leaping around all over the place doing different things. But then, in a few years to come, people walk down the street and there is an old board, you know, which has been splattered, and they'll say, "Oh, ain't it just like a Pollock?" See, ain't it just like a picture? Because they'll have been taught to see the marvel of these particular colors and forms. So again, some artist has done Maya. And so made a new universe to see. Now, however, here comes the interesting point. Is it all a projection, Maya?